I'm Mike Sargent. This is Real World. I'm going to review a couple films for you today. The first film is a film called Operation Mincemeat.
In 5 weeks, 100,000 British forces will strike Sicily's southern shore.
Unfortunately, the Nazis know of our intentions. So we're going to play a humiliating trick on Hitler.
We have to convince Germany that our target is Greece.
The plan begins in Spain,
where a corpse will wash up on shore bearing classified letters.
A corpse carrying fake documents.
Given the fascist network there, we could quite literally float the documents right into enemy hands.
Prime Minister, that's too big a risk. The fate of the world is at stake.
The plan is highly implausible.
So when can it be ready?
Well, what say we start with the easy part and find ourselves a corpse?
The thing is, the Germans will scrutinize every detail of our fallen man.
Where are his legs?
He must be as real as you or I.
He would carry a letter from his wife professing her deep love for him.
Very good. And he would carry her photograph.
My contribution to the mission, for a seat at the table.
Although, what if the autopsy reveals he didn't die of drowning? Or if the briefcase is returned to us without the Germans seeing its contents?
Charles, why on earth do you keep poking holes in our plan?
I'm preemptively poking. Success depends on guiding the papers in Hitler's hands.
The nightmare marching this way is only too real.
And the Spanish won't let the Germans anywhere near our briefcase. We are in the dark.
If the enemy is waiting for us on those beaches, history herself will avert her eyes from the slaughter.
I may vomit.
I may vomit with you.
In stories of war, there is that which is seen and that which is hidden.
In God's name, Fleming, what are you writing?
Spy story. In the hidden war, the truth is protected by a bodyguard of lies. Its soldiers unseen.
Pray.
Its heroes unsung. This is our war.
Operation Mincemeat is actually based on an actual operation that happened during World War II. If you are a World War II aficionado, maybe you know the fact that Operation Mincemeat was the most successful British deception operation of the Second World War. And it was basically where they had an elaborate deception scheme that they were going to invade Sicily. And the way they did it is they got the body of a tramp or a homeless person who had possibly, on purpose or accidentally, eaten rat poison. They decided to dress this person up, give them a fake identity, fake papers, to set up this narrative that they were planning to invade Greece and Sardinia, and Sicily was really going to be a feint. But in reality, of course, it was the opposite. But what ended up happening is that the Germans fell for it, and they were able to liberate Sicily very easily. Now, what makes this fascinating, besides the fact that that's an interesting story in itself and has been not only novelized and made into different films back in the 50s, it was a film called The Man Who Never Was, based on the novel from 1950 by a former cabinet minister, Duff Cooper, that was called Operation Heartbreak. Now, what's interesting is that the people, all the admirals, the people in the military that were behind this operation, besides the former cabinet minister, was a personal assistant to the director of naval intelligence, a lieutenant commander, Ian Fleming. Now, interestingly enough, in the film, Ian Fleming is played by an actor named Johnny Flynn, who really does a pretty good Ian Fleming, just based on the limited amount of footage and photographs we've seen of Ian Fleming. He comes across as what you picture a young Ian Fleming being like. It's interesting, John Patrick Flynn has also played David Bowie in the movie Stardust. So he's an actor who's clearly beginning to make a career out of playing iconic figures. What makes this movie stand out, besides the cast, which is terrific? And it stars Colin Firth, Matthew McFadden, Kelly MacDonald, Jason Isaacs, and a number of other British character actors that you've seen if you've seen a lot of British films or British television. But the screenplay is really, really outstanding. It's written by a writer named Michelle Ashford, and she is a writer who's written a number of other things. Probably the most well-known was the miniseries John Adams. She wrote the first episode of that. But she's written a few other things that, including Masters of Sex, the period drama television series that was on Showtime back in 2013. I recommend Operation Mincemeat, especially if you know nothing about what happened and what Operation Mincemeat was all about. The title turned me off because I thought, is this a comedy? It sounded like a 60s romp to me. But the reality is, when you find out why it was called Operation Mincemeat, it makes a lot of sense, because it was clearly a innocuous title that would never, if it was discovered, give away anything about the nature of what this operation was. I recommend it highly. If you're a World War II aficionado, probably give it even an extra star for not only its historical accuracy, but just in the scope of the film and, like I said, the writing. Really, really solid film. I recommend it. It's on Netflix right now, but I believe it's also playing in theaters. So, Operation Mincemeat. The next film is one of two horror films that are coming out today. This is a remake of, I don't know if you want to call it a classic, but it's an iconic Stephen King novel. It's a film called Firestarter.
Daddy.
What's going on, sweetie?
Something feels weird. Something's changing.
You remember the tools we taught you, right?
Pencil. Desk. Paper. Shoes. You're weird.
Everything okay, Charlie?
It happened again.
What happened?
The bad thing.
If you ever start to lose control, what do you do?
It didn't work. She's not a robot, Annie. She's a little girl. With little girl emotions, which are wildly unpredictable.
Charlie?
She just has to shove it down and keep it hidden.
Our responsibility is getting her ready.
Our responsibility is to protect her.
Charlie?
If they catch her, they're gonna put her in a cage.
Charlie?
They're gonna run tests on her for the rest of her life. We'll never see her again.
If who catches me?
Something's happened. I need it handled with discretion. And I need her back alive.
Holy shit.
Do you know what it means to be on the run?
Bad men are after us. Really bad.
I hate living like this!
You're special,
Charlie. I'm not special. I'm a monster! Charlie!
I'm going to help her.
You want to use her?
Charlie?
Don't be stupid.
Where's Mommy?
Do you feel that? Let her go or it's going to get a lot worse.
Where's Mommy? Tell me now!
She's the first of her kind. A real life superhero.
You need to understand how to use it. It can't be a reaction. It's got to be a decision. That's the only way that you can control it.
She's becoming a young woman.
I'm not going to jail.
And someday soon,
you're going to change the world.
She may be capable of a nuclear explosion.
Run, Charlie! On your knees!
Simply with the force of her mind.
Who will go in here?
Promise me that you'll never use your gifts to hurt people.
I'll only hurt bad people, I promise.
Trust me, Charlie. You don't have to be afraid. Please, I can help you.
Liar, liar. Pants on fire. I don't want to hurt anyone. But it feels kind of good.
Now, Firestarter, the original, starred Drew Barrymore and David Keith as her dad. And as with a number of Stephen King novels, it's got some plotting that's familiar. And if you don't know the story, it's about a couple that were experimented on and had a child, and then the child was born with powers that they were only being experimented on and given or enhancing their existing powers to begin with. And they've been on the run now because their child has all this power. There's an organization and a whole unit. The people who created them are behind them, and they're going to send someone to get them. It's an assassin. It's a Native American. There are a number of things about this. I think the premise for Firestarter is great. The whole idea of this young girl who's coming into her power and her parents who also have powers, and just the idea of this secret society in the novel. It was called The Shop that's after them. And then what's really interesting is, I think, the idea of having this Native American character who in the story was one of the first people that was experimented on. That suggests a whole lot of other things about America and who we use as fodder for our experiments, which I like, and I like the social commentary of that. The unfortunate part is that this character, who appeared in the original version of Firestarter and the limited TV series Firestarter 2 Rekindling, which is universally panned, but both times, the character, the Native American character, known as Rainbird, was played by white actors. The first time by George C. Scott, the second time by Malcolm McDowell. So finally we get a Native American actor, Michael Gray Eyes. And actually, he does a pretty good job. He's solid, he's believable. It's a severely underwritten part, but he adds a lot of gravitas to what you have to assume is a character with a lot more depth than what we see on screen. The other positive thing about this version of Firestarter is the score. The score is actually by acclaimed horror director John Carpenter. Now, John Carpenter's known for writing the scores to his films and creating sort of this iconic, brooding, pulsating electronic music that he was very much known for from the 70s and 80s. And many, many, let's just say, tropes of horror have used the type of music that he created. So for him to actually come now and write the score for a film he didn't direct, and ironically, a film, the original, back in 1984, he was supposed to direct, but The Thing bombed so badly, and that was his version of The Thing back then with Kurt Russell and not David Keith, but Keith David. That didn't happen. So back then, a different director did it. There were a couple directors who were supposed to do this new one, but this one now, interestingly enough, just bring it all full circle. Unfortunately, even though I think Zac Efron as the dad does a solid job playing the dad, and I have to say, as someone who's not necessarily a fan, I do appreciate that Zac Efron has been worked pretty hard to change that pretty boy image, to actually expand himself and do different kinds of roles. And I think he will eventually one day gain respect overall from people more than just his original teen fans. But this film, while the plot and the premise is good, and while the characters and the setup could be good, it really falls pretty flat. And it's disappointing because I really did want to like this. It's got a lot of things going for it. Stephen King, who at this point is a universe unto himself in terms of the amount of work that's being constantly adapted and readapted and reimagined from his work. Probably one of the most prolific writers of all time, just in terms of how much his storytelling has been spread throughout the world and adapted. But this really is fairly by the numbers and pedestrian. I wanted it to be better. I like the fact that the poster, if you see the poster for this Firestarter, it looks almost exactly like the original poster for Firestarter, which was an iconic poster with Drew Barrymore's hair blowing and the fire behind her. And they do the same thing. And if you look at it quick, you're like, oh, that's the same poster. Oh, that's Drew Barrymore. It's not. It's a new actress. you want this to be better. It's not very scary. It does have its thrills. It is fun, of course, to see this little girl unleash her powers after holding them back for so long and burn up lots of bad guys. There is one disturbing scene with a cat, that's all I'll say. But overall, not a lot of imagination, not a lot of reason to make this. It's a Blumhouse production, and when you see it, you can see they're clearly angling to turn this into a series. And then quite honestly, I like these characters enough, I like the premise enough that I would watch. I know there was a TV series that I've heard is pretty bad. I would watch another movie if it were better, if they could improve this. Stephen King remakes have been getting better. The recent remake of It and some other things, sometimes they don't get it right the first time, sometimes they get it right the second time. This time, they didn't get it right the first time, they didn't get it right this time. Throughout the film, there's this line that keeps being repeated where the parents of Charlie, the little girl, or the fire starter, keep saying, when you see her, you'll understand. And characters say this to each other. When you see this, you won't understand. Musically, since this is a movie show, and as you know, I like to play movie soundtracks, I'm going to do a couple things. I'm going to play some John Carpenter music, but then I'm going to play some James Bond music. Because we're talking about Ian Fleming, and we're talking about John Carpenter. So, how often you get to hear John Carpenter music and James Bond music in the same show? I can't think of any time that'll happen. So stay tuned for some movie music, the music of John Carpenter, and some James Bond music.
Thank you.
I'm Mike Sargent. This has been Real World. You've been listening to some movie soundtracks. We played first some John Carpenter. We heard from the score to Prince of Darkness, from the score to Escape from L.A. And then we just heard from John Barry, the Thunderball Suite. I'm here every Friday from 6:30 to 7 p.m. If you've enjoyed this show, please consider becoming a WBAI buddy in the name of Real World. We need your money right now. We need to pay the rent. So please call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 is the number to make a pledge right now. And please, we need your help. We need to keep the rent paid. We need to keep the lights on. And we need to keep broadcasting to you. So until next week, I will see you at the movies.
For WBAI in New York, I'm Linda Perry, thanking new BAI buddies. Tracy Washington from Somerset, New Jersey. She's a new buddy and hopes WBAI continues and informs the people. Her favorite show is one we just relaunched, Black Agenda Radio with Margaret Kimberly. It's broadcast on Fridays at 5 p.m.
Welcome to Black Agenda Radio, where we provide news, commentary, and analysis from a Black left perspective.
Daniel from Lodi, New Jersey, thank you for becoming a new buddy. He says he likes all BAI shows. Nathaniel from Philly is a new buddy, and so is another buddy from The Village. Gregory from Massapequa says thank you to WBAI. His favorite show is What's Happening with Ralph Pointer and Betty Davis.
Get set. Ralph Pointer, What's Happening?
Good evening, my sisters and brothers and sisters. We do have an interesting program for you, as we promised.
David Somerville from Harlem is a large WBAI buddy contributor. His favorite show is Living for the City with Michael G. Haskins. He also likes many of our programs. He lists them, The Gary Null Show.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We begin with the latest on health and healing. This comes from the National Institutes of Health, National Institute on Aging. Lower the risk of dementia in people who are...
baby.
Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall.
Yes, here on WBAI 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. There is so much going on in the world, and it's great to know that WBAI is here for us.
David also likes Black Agenda Radio and Milton Alamadi and Colin Benjamin's Black Star News.
Greetings, greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to your favorite Pan-Africa news show.
From the Streets with Bob Law.
Let's look a little closer at the music that in a real sense could be called the soundtrack for the 20th century. It's going to be an interesting conversation, so join me. This sunny spring Saturday in the city, this is 99.5 WBAI. I'm Bob Law.
Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we look at the origins of the war in Ukraine and the role that the United States played in bringing that war about.
We speak Mind Flight with Imhotep Gary Bird.
Well, good evening. Pass the word. We are back with you flying high on a Sunday night.